phrasing.
Okay, everybody ready to get rolling? I don't think we have any guests, so I have to go around and introduce ourselves. I think we all know who we are. And who do we have on the phone?
Judith.
Hi, Judy.
Hi.
We're going to get rolling. So
okay.
Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being here. Sorry I was late. Buses. There's a major bus driver shortage in Clark County, if everyone doesn't know. So we need to get rolling and start with the approval of the January minutes. So can we have a motion? And do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, thanks, Judy.
Good.
And is there any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
And
aye.
Thank you. And the January minutes are approved. So then, the composition of the bylaws. And then, Rebecca, I forget, what was I supposed to talk about with that?
Well, if you're okay, I'll go ahead and go through the bylaw changes.
That'd be great.
So there's been some discussion in the department about aligning the CAB with the counselor district. So for some of you that have been around for several years, we used to have the board regions aligned with the commissioner districts back when we had three commissioners. When the charter went into effect, the CAB, we decided to stay with the three districts because of concerns about having enough coverage for elected officials and low-income reps. But recently we've been speaking as staff, and there's a push to get us back in line with the counselor districts. So we would move to four districts. To do that, we would need to update the bylaws. So I went and did an in-depth review of the bylaws, and I made a lot of really minor adjustments to the bylaws. For example, the county is rebranding, and we're no longer known as the Department of Community Services. We are just Clark County Community Services. So that is a big change throughout the bylaws, so we don't say the department any longer. Word choicing in here, so we say needy. We move that, the change of terminology there. So I'd like to just do a quick review of what the changes are in the bylaws, so that we can have a discussion and hopefully adopt those changes. I'm going to skip over the ones that are the department, because we just discussed those. So if we go to page 2, Article 3, Section F, this is where we did a word choice change from saying needy to disadvantaged populations. We just felt it's a better phrase to use. On the same page, Section 2, Letter C, we just wanted to update this to be more in line with what the CAB is actually doing, where the review, the evaluation of progress of the programs is really done through regular review of program outcomes through those quarterly reports. And then if we go, the next change is the big change on page 4, under Article 4 for members composition. So we are currently a 9-member board. By going in line with the council districts, we would then become a 12-member board. And then one of the bigger changes that we would like to make is we have historically had a representative from the city of Vancouver on our board representing District 3, which was then District 3. Because of the coordination between the city and the county and the document recording fees that we oversee, we wanted to make sure that we always had a Vancouver City Council member on our board. And so now we're just putting it in writing that one of those public office members would be held by the Vancouver City Council, and that they would just appoint somebody to the board. So that would be just the one position there. So you'll see that in the changes, it's changing the number 3 to the number 4, and we took out advisory board districts and changed that to county council district is how our regions will be defined. Are there any questions about that piece? Because that was kind of a bigger change.
So
I have a question.
Vancouver City Council person.
So they do get to see and influence policies and funding. Mm-hmm.
And we've had folks from those other cities with us before.
Yes.
It was never
and we will still outreach to them and hope to get them to participate in the board. And so, yes, because Battleground for the longest time just appointed a member. It was amazing. Another change, wording change that we came across was we still had him or her, so we changed that to them, more broad statements. And then the next big change was a discussion that we had with the executive team about trying to make the meetings more accessible for board members and the public to participate in the board. On page 8, Article 7, under Section 2, talking about regular meetings, we've added in number 2 that says, regular meetings shall be held in person or via an electronic method such as Skype, conference call, webinar, etc., or a combination of both. However, in-person meetings are preferred for the board, but this just allows us to be able to do things if we have a weather-related incident or members know in advance that they're not going to be able to attend in person but want to be a part of the meeting, that type of thing. It just gives us more options to hold the meetings. And then with that, we added under notices, if an electronic meeting, the notice shall include how to access the meeting, such as a telephone number, website address, etc., when we do the notification. Are there any questions about that piece?
So that part that you cleared up with the electronic meetings, we had talked about that a little bit. That makes it in line with what the county is okay with as far as the lawyers,
yes,
and all that.
So we also wanted to try to do email meetings, but I sent the draft bylaws to our prosecuting attorney for review, and email meetings aren't allowed under the Open Public Meetings Act because you can't have public participation. So we had to remove that piece, but they were fine with us doing the electronic method as long as we had in there and make sure that we do notify the public of how they can attend. And in most cases, we will still have a meeting here with just staff if others can't attend, so the public could still be here, and then we would have the electronic method here, Skype or conference call in this room also. But we'll make sure that it goes online on our website, and it would be part of the agenda to notify.
I'd love to see more people from the public here. I mean, we could set up some grand stands here. I don't think it's a huge thing.
One other piece that the prosecuting attorney mentioned that was missing from our bylaws is under Section 7 of the meetings under public access and notifications. So I added number 4, and it says, a discussion held by a quorum of advisory board members is considered a meeting and must comply with the Open Public Meeting Act. So basically what it means is that if 5 of our members get together in a meeting, then it's open public meeting, and we need to make sure that we do the proper notifications and allow the public. So we want to keep that into consideration when we have subcommittees, that we don't go over the, or meet that quorum requirement.
And that's a kind of a touchy one, because if a quorum decided to ride together to a meeting, to some event, it's really kind of a gray area, because if they talk about anything related to CAB, that makes it an open public meeting.
Yes.
If they confine their conversations to mundane things that have nothing to do with CAB, then it's maybe okay, but it's still a gray area.
The nice thing is with a CAB, even at 9 members, quorum is 5. Mm-hmm. So it would be difficult to get 5 members together.
Yeah.
And intentionally, you know.
Right. Even for a dinner meeting or something.
Yes. Then I wanted to clarify on page 10, Article 8, Committees, Section 2, Other Committees. We weren't really following the bylaws, so I wanted to clarify more, have it state more of what we were actually doing. Before, it was talking about how the chair would appoint members to the subcommittees, and really, we haven't worked that way. It's really been a volunteer opportunity for people to be on subcommittees. So what I did was I changed number 2, and then I added number 3. Number 2 now says advisory board members shall volunteer for any committees or work groups. A chairperson for each committee or work group will be selected during the first scheduled meeting. In the event that there are not enough volunteers, the chairpersons may appoint additional advisory board members. That way, if we need, really we want to have at least 3 members. 3 to 4 would be our target for any subcommittees. And this way, it's really been how we've been working. Everybody's been volunteering for these subcommittees and work groups, but the chairperson then still has the right to appoint somebody to make sure that we have enough people to make that group. And then this is how we've been working, and I just wanted to get it into the bylaws. Number 3 says the committee chairperson is responsible for providing updates on the progress of the committee or work group to the full advisory board at the next regular meeting. And that's just how we've been working, so now it's documented in the bylaws. And then the last change that I am recommending is on page 11 under limitations, section 1 amendment. We currently say that the bylaws need to be amended by a 2/3 vote, but we've always been doing it at simple majority like we've been doing everything else. The difference is 1 person when we calculated it out, so it's really not influencing how many people it takes. It's just the wording that is needed to make sure that we're following the bylaws correctly. So I recommend that we say simple majority rather than 2/3. So those are all the changes that I...
Now, as I read this, you presented today, it can't be voted on today because it says that after all members have been provided with copies, has everyone been provided?
Yes, that's why I made sure I got them out last Tuesday.
So that...
with the summary of the changes so that we can make the change today. One other change that I... that isn't actually in the bylaws, but I noted reading through the bylaws, is that our conflict of interest policy was not meeting the bylaws. The bylaws state that if you have a conflict of interest or a possible conflict of interest, that you would be able to identify that on the conflict of interest policy, and we didn't have anywhere for that to happen. So I made a minor update to the conflict of interest policy and provided it to you today. And the only change is, under the by signing, I agreed to abide to the above policy. It has 2 check boxes. One that says, I do not have a conflict of interest for serving on this board. Or the second is, I have a potential conflict of interest. Please explain. So now you have the opportunity to say that you possibly have a conflict of interest. For example, when Ty was on the board, he was on, he's on the board of directors for Daybreak. They apply for funding from us periodically, that would be a conflict. So he would note that down, and then we would be able to let him know, we just need you to abstain from voting on that application. So not a problem for the entire one. But it gives the opportunity to write down what your conflict of interest might be. So that is a minor update to that document.
So someone could recuse themselves from just that one particular...
Correct. And then scores would be averaged over everybody else.
So she's provided these over there to sign and update just...
So that we have...
We already have one on file, probably, but the new one with the box check is there to sign.
I see this one. I've signed already. Is that the new one or is it...
So that's the old one, okay. The one that we had at the January meeting. I found this just a couple of weeks ago when I was reviewing the bylaws.
So we all have a copy of the new one we need to sign today?
Correct. Okay. And for those that are not able to attend the meeting in person, we'll make sure that we have them at the next meeting so that they can be signed then.
Okay. I move the adoption of the bylaws changes.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Sure.
Okay, any further discussion about those bylaws? Okay, then that motion has been approved. Oh, no, sorry, all in favor. Judy? Can you still hear us? You're in approval of the changes to the bylaws?
Correct.
Okay. Correct. Great. Then we will move on with that being approved and the motion.
I had a question that started coming. So I was looking on the website at the official minutes and things, and it says there's an audio recording there. Mm-hmm. The couple I clicked didn't work, and I wondered if we were audio taking.
Yes. Janet has them. And so that would be something that Janet can look into to see whether, because we don't want to have files of them that aren't working.
Right. I thought, well, maybe this is just a structure format, you know, a template. And, but I didn't realize we were.
Oh, thank you for letting us know. I do want to let you know that in your documents you have what the new board would look like with having 12 members. And we'll make, you can keep this copy for your books. On the back is actually the council districts, so you can see how they lay out. And I tried to color code them as close as possible on the chart. And then you'll see that we have 6 open positions right now. So we, Michael and I have dedicated April to really working on a new application and a new process based on best practices so that we can go out and recruit new members.
Will we have a chance to review that?
Yes.
Cool.
Yes, we want to have it ready for the May meeting for you to review.
Good.
Yes.
And what happens with, we lost somebody and then there were two changes?
So, yes. So, Rebecca Anderson, unfortunately, was not able to remain on the board. She had too many absences from the board, so we had to open up her position. And then Nancy had resigned at the end of last year due to family situations. And then Julie Rott, yes, she recently resigned. Her family, they're in Florida. They moved like a week later. She's now in Florida. She sent a very nice email, and she really loved participating in the PCAB, and she's really hoping to find community action agency in her new home area so that she can participate there, too. So she was very grateful for the ability to serve on this board. So we will go out to bid, or not out to bid, I'm so used to saying we're for construction and request for applications. We'll work on the application process and then be able to have a really thorough recruitment process.
So we currently have 6 members?
We currently have 6 members, correct.
And does my calling in count as attendance?
Yes.
Yes, it does. Yes.
Way to go.
Yeah, it's important. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I will make the updates to the bylaws that we discussed today, and then I can email them out to you, and I'll have physical copies for you at the next meeting. And we'll make sure that everything that pertains to the fact that we are now a 12-member board will be updated as we find it, because I'm sure there's documents that I don't know where they're at. So.
Okay. I will say that I agree with the changes that I think it makes more sense to follow the, you know, city council or the county council thing, but charters are not fairly unwieldy when you actually get to the decision making point, and I realize that isn't there yet, but that could be a lot of people.
Yes. And it'll make it a lot easier during recruitment for explaining what geographic area they need to be in. So,
very cool. Awesome. Thank you, Rebecca. So then we will move into our outcomes report. So this big sheet with all the numbers on it.
Yes. So here's our year end for 2016. This is actually a contract end report for year-to-date totals for 2016 and 2017. You'll see that most of the agencies completely spent out, or were very close to spending out on them. Those that did not spend out, for example, Impact Northwest with their permanent supported housing program, we've recaptured those funds, and we adjusted their new contracts based on the fact that they did not spend out the last time. So their new contract is not at the level that it was before because of their performance. I do want to point out that I highlighted under the permanent supported housing for Impact Northwest that number 7, because it doesn't make any sense that they only served 5 households, but then 7 households maintained or increased income. I've gone back to them, and I'm waiting to get true clarification of why that was.
What's number 7?
So on the front page, Impact.
Impact Northwest.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
So I'm still waiting for clarification on how that number came to be. But everybody else was close to spending out. And the Salvation Army is intentional.
Right.
And we do keep them at the same level. It doesn't matter. We always do the 10,000 per year.
Can I ask you a question about that emergency fund?
Mm-hmm.
Would that work if someone has an apartment that they're renting that has mold in it?
Only if code enforcement comes in and says that it's inhabitable. But if that happens, yes. Then the code enforcement would have them contact the Salvation Army, and then the Salvation Army would go directly to this fund for that.
Okay.
So for the homeless and share the... I'm not sure who y'all should aspire. They have spent.
So the Consolidated Homeless Grant has a different funding period. So they are still in their 2017 funding year. It goes until June 30th, 2018.
So they're still on contract.
Yes.
So when you look at the annual or the total, numbers of people served. Some of them are cumulative, like they have to receive services and then they succeed at something. Some of them are measuring, like Columbia Road, for example. You can't say they served 71 people, for instance, if you added that first column.
So
it's the 20, they're not overlapping. We don't get them.
So that.
Are you saying between all the projects?
No,
or
I'm just saying
project?
Within each project.
So in
of the numbers listed here.
So you would get first most of them. You do get a true sense of what. So with Columbia River, they served in 2016. They served 29 individuals, and in 2017 they served 17. That program would. 27. That would not, those numbers don't cross over. They are individual.
Unduplicated
numbers.
Right, but, so job placement is one set of numbers. Employment training is a different set of numbers.
It could be the same. And
there may be duplication between those categories.
Yes, and in most cases they will be duplicated.
I was trying to see how many people each of these things serve, but you can't do it from here.
We tried to get in there the number served. For example, the individuals received direct job placement would kind of be an idea of how many they served.
Well, except that the next one
is
so much
higher.
So if you look at unduplicated individuals, like for that specific program, terms served, there are 52 individuals that that program has served. Out of those 52 individuals, 27 received direct job placement.
So it's just the...
Yeah. And the 16 maintained employment for at least 90 days.
Sure. Well, that makes sense.
And there is some that cross over 2016 and 2017. For example, if you look at Janus Youth, the Nest Rapid Rehousing Program, the outcome is households do not re-enter within 6 months of program exit, and there's a asterisk there because they could have started the program in 16. They made 6 months in 17.
So I was just curious as to how many total programs served, and then I realized you couldn't add.
Yes, the report to the community is the one that really gives you that better look at the numbers served.
The duplicate.
Yes.
So, looking at this, it's hard for, at least in my mind, I can't tell right off the bat which funding stream each of these are from. Is there a way that you can include a column on here that tells us the funding stream and the contract period?
So the top part says community funds. So all of the first and second page is our community funds. We restructured our contracts, and then it'll be more clear with the next report because we broke it down by funding. The contracts are no longer community funds contracts. They're broken down by what their main funding source is. So they'll say house bills, or they'll say human service fund, community services block grant, so it'll be more clear.
A little bit more detail because community funds doesn't tell me what the funding stream is.
Correct.
So it would really help me, in my mind, to know which funding stream is providing for each program, and then also the contract period, because it's also hard to tell looking at the percentages spent.
Everything is now in the same contract period.
That's good.
So both the things, almost the same letter, but both the things you asked, we've been implementing.
Okay, good.
Yes.
It is listed that way in the budget.
Good.
Yes.
Yep.
So we're doing 18-month contracts this time, and then everybody will be in line with the July 1, 2030. And yes, that was a very intentional thing for us to move towards getting them to try to get it to where it's not as confusing.
Yeah.
There's so many funding sources and programs that are overseen by this board that, yes, we are trying to simplify it and provide as much information as we can at the same time.
And that will help us a lot, I think, in the advocacy piece of it, too, to be able to really explain better what those funding streams are able to provide.
So when you go into the county budget and you start looking under the funding streams or the descriptions, under community services, the last category is called human services, and it's the only place that CAP is mentioned is the advisory board. It doesn't state in the narrative that CAP oversees or monitors the other funding streams. So I just thought it was interesting because I don't actually know what human services consists of.
Yeah, we have the human services fund, which is a very small general fund.
Okay. That is the only one where CAP is mentioned.
Do they list out like our federal and state funding streams, or is it just the local dollars?
No, they list.
Well, I need to look at what we're talking about, but the county budget itself talks about all the grants. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we'll take a look at that. I'm not as familiar with the county budget, obviously.
Well, we were talking about it a lot, so I was trying to see whether what was in the budget matched up with.
Can you send me a link so I can see what, just email me a link and I'll look at that and see what.
I probably wasn't while I was looking. It was still the draft budget, I think, that finalized it.
Yeah. Yeah, we can definitely take a look at that.
And maybe just a question of double checking the narrative, because as you say, why would you look at it?
Yeah. And then the. I forgot to put stars on. So I don't know, we haven't talked about the stars in quite a while, but I wanted to give a update on those. The stars at the left mean that they had a risk assessment within the last 3 years. We just completed volunteer lawyers and the YWCA, so I forgot to make those start before we copied those. So all of the normal agencies that we've been working with have received those assessments within the last 3 years.
Okay. And so the risk assessment is
fiscal
or fiscal?
It's fiscal. Well, it's fiscal administrative.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And there is a service component to that, but it's really...
Yeah.
You have the double stars at the bottom of the page. You put households in and refer them from previous years. I don't see any of that.
So that's where, and so it'll be the housing programs, the rental assistance ones, and under the outcomes. So on page one, if you look at Janice Keep the Nest, it's the fourth line up from the bottom. It says households do not reentry within 6 months of program exit, and there's two stars right there.
Oh, okay. So you got them in that column. So
you also have some on page three under ESG.
Yeah, so essentially,
okay, so
if they...
Not on this side, they're in...
Yes.
Okay, we're good. That's what I'm...
And that's basically, we want to make sure that the agencies can capture that they've served somebody in the previous year, but now they're hitting their 6 month or 1 year mark of being stably housed or whatever that program happens to be.
Yes, I agree. We will
be completely revamped with the new way we're contracting and all of that. So we'll take a look at
all those little
how
details.
We can figure out and make it a little bit more user.
For someone who doesn't follow all of it,
it is overwhelming. Trying to meet the org standards of providing all of the information at every regular meeting without doing 10 different reports. So it's like that, trying to find that balance.
Yeah.
It's amazing all the information's here.
Oh, it is. It really is.
Very good. Thank you for all your work on that, Rebecca. And so, Michael, you have some fun and interesting things for a legislative update, I'm sure.
Oh, always. We had a busy short session. Does everyone have one of these? Okay, good. And Bridget, you too. All right, so I'm not going to read through all of this, but we had at the state level a very busy, very successful short session. The status of every bill that relates to community action is in there, whether it was delivered to governor, signed into law, died in committee. So please go through it. If you have any questions, ask or send, or you can email and I'll do the best to answer. You know, the single biggest one that pertains to us is House Bill 1570.
The top of the next page.
Which, yes, page two, the very top, which was delivered to the governor. It's not been signed yet. It removed the sunset to the document recording fees, which is huge. Actually, which I would consider even bigger than increasing the document recording fees. But it also increased the document recording fees statewide by $22. That comes out to, we estimate, about a 60% increase in document recording fees. So we think it's going to be in terms of revenue. So currently we're doing about $3 million in revenue a year. So we'll see, we will see. And revenue is completely market dependent. What we have seen in the past also is, fluctuations of plus minus 600,000, between years. So, but that will be huge.
Is
and
there any reason to think the governor might veto that?
I don't think so. Seth Dawson, who's a lobbyist that WASCAP uses, has called into the governor's office and indicated support for all the bills that are on his desk that he has not signed yet, and has also asked that if the governor has any questions to please reach out, and if to indicate if he's intending to sign or not sign. So I've seen absolutely nothing that would lead me to believe that this specific bill would be vetoed by the governor.
The rumor I've heard is that he's waiting to get a bunch of bills, and then he's going to do a big signing party.
Oh, I'm sure.
Make it a big deal.
I just have happened to notice this, and I haven't researched it, but do either of you know about the 1831 revising resource limitations for public assistance?
It removes the source of income discrimination.
Okay.
Or it makes it so it's, you know, it is discrimination to not rent somebody based on their source of income. The city of Vancouver has had it in their ordinance for the last couple of years, and so that's a really big one there.
The other bill that that we've been monitoring and keeping an impact on, it will have an impact on us. I'm trying to find it right now. But it allows people to stay on HEN longer, people who are on HEN that would be forced onto ABD. So that will increase our HEN expenditures and this 2667, and that's the third page halfway down. So that we expect that will increase our HEN expenditures. We're not sure by how much yet. The state, you know, Department of Commerce and the SHS are also still not sure, and they're trying to calculate by how much. But it will be helpful because,
yes,
you know, what happens, Housing and Essential Needs, the program, that is for individuals who are midterm unemployable because of some temporary disability. Often they transition to the ABD program, which is age blind and disabled. While they're on HEN, they can have they have access to rental assistance, they have access to essential needs. When they transition to ABD, it's just a cash that goes away, and it just turns into a cash benefit that goes down to like $197. So while you were on HEN, you're probably, you know, your rent was being paid for, you had minimal access to essential needs, and suddenly you lose everything. You know, so it's a good pathway to becoming homeless. So allowing them to either stay on, you know, to stay on HEN for a longer period of time or an indeterminate amount of time is going to be pretty important to stability.
There were several households that was they would be receiving HEN, and then they would fall into ABD, and then they would go back into HEN, and then they would fall back into ABD. And so it's really making it so where it's just consistent. And so that's a big change for it. And
but this
very
is
very positive.
But this is a pretty good summary in terms
of,
state. In terms of federal, I don't have a lot that's new to report, but I just wanted to quickly go over in terms of what the National Community Action Foundation supports for fiscal year 2019 appropriations. And they're shooting for CSBG funding of more than $750 million. This is at the federal level, which basically would be a slight increase. Weatherization of $250 million, and LIHEAP funding of $3.8 billion, which would include a $400 million contingency fund. And that contingency fund is already has already been authorized. But those are, you know, at a very, very high level, the appropriations goals that NCAF is lobbying for and the National Community Action Foundation supports. In terms of the fiscal year 2019 budget, and the information I'm giving you here is current as of February 26th, so it's still fairly recent and there hasn't been a whole lot of movement yet. Trump administration budget proposal is pretty much dead on arrival in Congress. The House and Senate Budget Committee plan on very sparse, bare bones budget resolutions for fiscal year 2019. David Bradley reports that Republicans are playing defense on budget matters before this November midterm election. They do not expect wild cuts or ambitious agenda items this year. Because spending caps have already been agreed to for both fiscal year 2018 and fiscal year 2019, a budget resolution, you know, some members of Congress on the Republican side are arguing that a budget resolution probably isn't necessary because of that, but the general consensus is that it is. The Congress is likely to avoid deep, specific program cuts for fiscal year 2019. But the expectation is that the budget debate for 2019 is going to be very difficult and partisan. So the outcomes not deep cuts, mostly continuing the agreements that were reached towards the end of last year, but still in a very partisan environment. And really, that's it. You know, that's all we know right now.
Can I ask you, I've seen this and I didn't know if it was junk news, and so I wanted to ask and see if you'd heard anything about the idea of replacing food stamps with home delivered food.
So that wasn't junk news, that was an idea that was floated by the president. But I haven't seen any actual proposal along those lines or any projections of changing it. And at least the reaction from the services communities and a lot of stakeholders was that it would not
fly.
It wouldn't really be beneficial. So as far as I know, it's gone nowhere, at least to this point.
Okay. Thank you.
It'll come back up in some way, but I don't know that anything will come of it.
Okay.
They want to do a drone drop. I wanted to ask, I love this format. Is there any way at the beginning of the session we could almost get a blank template and then just add things in as we go? Because I get really lost.
Sure. I think so. I'll try. I mean,
yeah.
Okay.
Because especially, you know, for advocacy,
I
think, I don't know which bill this is, you know, everybody has a different way of describing it. So this really helps.
Yeah, this is a great feat.
I can't take credit. This is Seth. Awesome.
It's awesome.
Thank you, Seth.
Perfect. Thank you. And Bridget, do you want to share with us about the advocacy task force?
Ooh. Nice. Yes, we had a meeting. It was good.
Great discussion. Thank you. Moving on.
Yeah. And we sort of, in some ways, went back to square one to see where we were and how we defined advocacy. And we had quite an ambitious agenda, particularly for Kelly, to do a lovely go to me and to say, why didn't you do this? But I know in my mind, I'd love to get that prep work done so that we can coordinate next year so we can be ready for Advocacy Day ahead of time with the program so that we know who we want to talk to and we know which members belong to different groups where they might talk about CAP work. So, Kelly, do you want to tell us your agenda?
Yeah, so we also, we came up with a list of advocacy organization email alerts where you could just click on the link. So we created that and then we discussed it more at the last meeting and kind of came up with some other organizations that needed to be added. And then also we thought it would be good to add a veterans advocacy organization to the list as well. And then we talked about coming up with a letterhead for the CAB for whenever you write to, elected officials. And so we're working on that. And then also a resource folder for when CAB members meet with different boards and councils and that type of thing. And let's see, what else? We're just kind of going back and looking at our, you know, the goals and stuff for the task advocacy board and figuring out where we're at, where we want to go, that type of thing.
So I feel like we're really revamping and really putting the systems and the structure in place to be able to, for all of us, to make advocacy more of a priority and do it in a systematic way that makes sense for everyone. So I'm really grateful for the work that we're doing.
Group. It was one of the attachments was on the an NCAP newsletter, and it was community advocacy sort of notes, appendix. And it, because we were talking about the definition of advocacy, it started with the definition, and it was very down to earth. It got quite federal later on, but the beginning I thought was an excellent summary for us on how to talk and who to talk and who's best to talk to whom and that sort of thing. So worth reading. So everybody probably got it originally, but it was really, this was buried in a bunch of attachments. So maybe I'll send it out.
Yeah, could you send it out again? Okay, we are running a little bit behind, but we do want to learn about the customer satisfaction survey.
Yes. So we did this, the first one last year, and so we updated it, and there's a lot of things that are very similar to last year. A lot of the themes we saw were very similar. We did better with getting more agencies to participate in giving us their satisfaction survey. One thing we realized was that they were giving us their summaries in a couple of different formats. So there's actually more programs that submitted their customer satisfaction, but we couldn't include it in one chart for this report. They were giving us a summary of the average overall response was 3.7, where we really need the numbers to show positive and negative. So we will be revamping our year-end narrative to all of the programs next year to be very specific on giving us that exact information so that we can include even more next year. What we see from last year to this year is we went from a 92% overall positive rating for the agencies to a 78% overall rating. But that includes several additional agencies and a lot more people in those numbers. So you would expect that there would be some little bit downward trend. So the top talks about the respondents within those programs. One thing I wanted to note is that on the second bullet, it says, of these agencies reporting services to individuals, at least 3,930 were served. However, the summer meals program doesn't count individuals, they count meals. And so we got several responses about satisfaction. They were all very positive with the summer meals program. I just couldn't put an actual number to add it into there. To how many were served, but it is captured within the actual overall positive negative chart that you see. We did see that in the growth areas there was some more discussion about participants wanting to have better communication between staff and clients, but otherwise generally very happy with the programs. They felt safe when they were talking with their case managers. They were getting their needs met. One that I saw a few more times this year was that they were expressing gratitude towards staff and volunteers. So not just the staff, but volunteers at the different programs. And then at the bottom, you can see some of the sample comments that people made. One of my favorites was, I am so much more confident in myself. I am aware of so many resources that I have shared with others in my community. In 1 week, I have been able to make the needed edits to my resume, and I feel fully prepared for an interview. And that was from a Pick a Career Academy participant. And I really loved how they were talking about sharing what they learned with their community. So that is the overall review of the customer satisfaction. So still positive, just not as positive as last year.
Thank you, Rebecca. Okay, so we're going to get started and hear the amazing work that Donna Langwell does at Partners in Careers. And I should also mention that LaDonna comes out and works with some